Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, I'm Kevin McNally and I'm with Chris Gordon on hellblazer.biz for the second time in my life. And I'll hand you over to Chris right now.
Everyone, as you have heard, I am here with the esteemed actor, Kevin McNally, who has returned to Hellblazer Biz to chat with me. Former guest, I think it's the second time you've been on now, isn't it?
Second time.
So, thank you for joining me again.
Well, it's obviously a once-a-year thing now, so there we go.
an annual catch-up to find out how you've been getting on and what work you've been doing. Because you have been very, very busy, Kevin. You really have.
I have. You know, I'm very fortunate, really, very lucky for that.
Yeah. Because I think, yeah, especially with all this COVID that we've had for 2 years, it's been so difficult for artists and performers like yourself and Barrett to actually get together because of, you know, your overnight rules can change and, you know, things where you could have productions.
Absolutely. And particularly if you get caught away and then you can't get back. That's always a worry, yeah.
It is. I've got a performing friend. She does more of the circus dancing type thing, you know, the fire eating, that kind of actress. Yeah. So she's stuck in Nigeria because they changed the rules overnight for her, and it cost to come back will be £2,500 to stay in a quarantine hotel. It's crazy. It's obviously, I mean, we've got to take precautions, but.
Yeah, we have, but
people need to be sensible.
One does suspect that there are a lot of people making a great deal of money out of it, even though, I mean, you know, certainly not thinking that it's not real, but, you know, I don't think people should be profiting from it, profiteering. It's what they used to call carpetbaggers, I think, in the 30s.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually, but I think you're definitely right about people profiteering on the pandemic that we have. Yeah. Which is wrong. It is wrong. Mm. But that's another story for another time. And I will be here all night talking about that.
Yes.
On my soapbox. I mean, since we've last talked, obviously, you know, you've been a pirate. You've gone to the World War II home front. You've been involved in World War II in another way. On screen as well. You've been part of the Downton Abbey crew. You've been the Crown. You've flown in the TARDIS most recently as well. So, you know, it's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, so you never mind travelling with a green card. You could have just hopped in that again.
I know, the time they're very, very lax at customs in the TARDIS. You just go anywhere you like. It's great. It's been wonderfully busy. And I had some stuff in the can before I started. One of the biggest things about the last 2 years is that I have managed to work with a lot of young people, young filmmakers who I probably normally wouldn't have been available to work with. So that's been really fun. And they are ongoing relationships that I hope will fruit into something, you know, interesting in the near future.
Fantastic. That sounds really, really good. Mm. Again, I think that you're right, because with the situation that we're in, it's encouraged a lot of people to, like you say, to younger people, they found new ways to be able to...
To start creating their own work, yeah, because exactly, you can't rely upon it coming in, absolutely.
Exactly, which is fantastic. I'm going to mention Das Boot here, because I loved the original. I didn't realise you were in it, to be fair.
No.
And then when I saw your pop-ups, I was like, wow, that's Kevin.
So, yeah.
What did you think? What did you think being part of that? Because obviously I had trepidation about a remake of Das Boot, because obviously the original is such a classic, and I remember watching it. I think it was a much longer series in Germany as well. The original, they split it out a lot longer.
I wasn't aware of there being a series there. I remember the Wolfgang Petersen 1984 movie, which I absolutely loved, and I had the same trepidation. But I rapidly realized reading it that it was sort of like Das Boot, but it was taken from some very different angles of the war. The boat was actually only a part of it, and so
yeah,
there was a lot of French, a lot of it was in French, a lot of it was in German. And some of it, my part was in English. I was playing an American industrialist who was profiteering from the war, as many guys did back then. But obviously to be, you know, Das Boot was so such an important film for me that to be in any way part of it was great. And originally I went in to do one scene, one big scene at the end of the series. And but it was one of those scenes when I went, oh, it just doesn't matter how small the role is. This it's such a good scene. I'll go and do it. And quite right, they couldn't find anybody to do it better than me. and so I went and did that. But the chemistry worked great between me and the guy playing my son, and worked well with the people who were making it. So they made him a regular character in the second series. So that was that was really nice to go back to Prague and finish my story off, really.
Fantastic. Is that where it was filmed, was it?
Yeah. Prague, beautiful city, beautiful.
Gorgeous city. I used to, when I was 25 years ago now, I'm cracking on. I used to live in Germany, right by the Czech Republic border. So I used to live in Prague quite whenever I could. It is a glorious city to be in.
It's one of the best cities in Europe. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. But that's part of the series as well. I absolutely adore the new series.
Good.
It was fantastic. Like you say, it was vastly different. I think when I mentioned the original series, it was what they did was in Germany they split the film. If I remember rightly, that's all they did. They serialized.
Yes, they had a long version of the film. I think. Yeah. A sort of a director's cut, and they made it into a number.
Yeah, they serialized that. Yeah, they split it into bits. That's why. Yeah. But this one, I mean, like you said, there's so many different aspects because obviously the film was very intense. It was 3 hours of being in that boat. But this one, you're in the boat. You've got the story behind the scenes. You've got, you've got your. I've forgotten the actor's name. I've met him, and he's a lovely guy. The Game of Thrones. He's in Game of Thrones, and the SS. You got his.
I've worked with him twice, and I can't quite get his name.
Tom.
Yeah.
Is it Tom? Yeah, Tom Blashear. Yeah. Is it Blashear? Yeah.
Yes, he was also. I did a. When Rowan Atkinson played that detective, I did. I did May one of those Gray, episodes with him. May Gray, that was it.
Yeah,
the memory's not what it was, Chris.
Oh, I'm getting there myself. I'm saying there's so many different storylines which all converged, but then you've still got that gripping, the gripping sense of dread when you're on that boat as well, and the cabin fever and stuff. And it's just. I mean, I love that kind of thing. I mean, there's one in Liverpool. It used to be there. They've cut it up now, made it a museum. But when it was actually a boat, you could go. It was obviously they'd raised it, so it was rusted. But you walked down that, and it was like the claustrophobic feeling of just so narrow passages as you walk. Yes. You're walking down. It's just
they have one at the Pearl Harbor Museum on Hawaii, which I went to see, and they also have one by there's a museum on an aircraft carrier that's hooked up to Manhattan, and they have
I've been on that one.
Absolutely stunning. And of course, the first thing I did when I got to Prague was I said, "Please take me to the set," because they had this amazing full set of the inside of the submarine,
and
it was such a joy. And the actually, looking at it, the detail was extraordinary. Mm-hmm. That you probably wouldn't even know how much detail there was when it was filmed,
It
was absolutely extraordinary. But work of art, really.
Definitely. From watching it, definitely the way it was, it created. And I love seeing all this, we're seeing a bigger influx now with the likes of Netflix and things like that, where we can actually get international collaborations and coming through.
I hope there's a lot more of it, actually. Yeah,
definitely. I mean, it's to see it on our screens and stuff, to be open to a whole new world of cinema. I've always loved German cinema anyway, and German television. Course, they've made some fantastic stuff. So to be able to get that on a much more mainstream as well, and obviously it was a mix of, I think, of, like I say, French, German, British. It was really, really good production.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Yeah.
No problem. And I know you've worked with many fine actors as well. And obviously, I know the ABC. I've got to mention the ABC murders.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Because one of my favorite actors is there. And you worked with him.
Well, I've worked with John Malkovich before, of course. And I knew John years ago I met him. He came to see a play I did in like 1982 in London. I did an American play. It was called Glengarry Glen Ross by David Mamet. And he came to see it, and he came to say, he was very kind, said some kind words afterwards. And we sort of remained, if not friends, acquaintances ever since. And so this was another small role, by the way. You're picking up all my nice small roles. And this was... They called me and they said, there's this role of this one very long scene, and it's with John Malkovich. I mean, understand you know John, and you get on with him. And obviously, he's a pretty incredible actor, and we just need somebody who can, you know, stand up and stand toe-to-toe with Malkovich. So we had a great couple of days filming this wonderful scene. In which, shockingly, there's no spoilers now, it's been out for ages, but shockingly, you think I'm going to be a leading character, and I have a heart attack at the end of the scene. Happens to be more and more these days.
Shocking. Is he as intense as, obviously, you know, it's a person? Because I don't know, he's hard for me to... I've never met the man. So watching his performances, he's got very intense roles, but he can also be highly comedic.
Yeah.
He just seems to have that such a dry humor.
He's just
but very talented.
He's a great character actor, is what he is. And we spent most of our time, which we usually do, talking about the theater, basically, because both of us are men of the theater. He told me a very sweet story. He said that I'd met him at the airport, actually, about a year before. And I said, John, you know, he was waiting to go home and I was waiting to go to America. He said, it's extraordinary. I was just talking about you yesterday. I was working with these students and I said to them at the end, they were working on American scenes. And at the end of it, I said, my God, all of you can do American accents. And I can remember the time when only Kevin McNally could. It's a sweet thing for him to say.
Yeah.
But he's a great guy. He's a great guy and fun to work with. And, you know, lots of anecdotes on set. It's just great.
Excellent. And another, I'm rushing, I'm going, speeding through your projects here, by the way, because there's just so many last time to pick and choose which ones. Dad's Army. The lost episodes. I know you're very, very passionate about this one, from the Riley guys. So what was the interest with you for bringing that back and bringing those lost episodes to life?
Well, I wasn't created by me. As you know, had recreated a hell of a lot of all of the lost episodes of Tony Hancock on the radio and on the television. But I had been, you know, I had been impersonating and had been influenced by Hancock for all of my adult life. And I thought that would be the end of me bringing, you know, long dead comedians to life. So when they came to me and said, we're recreating the three lost episodes of Dad's Army. And my reaction was sort of, well, that's very interesting, but what has that got to do with me? I didn't. And they said, well, we want you to play Captain Mannering. And I thought, I said, do you mean you're recreating Arthur Lowe playing Captain Mannering? They said, yeah. Well, I had never thought of myself as having a Captain Mannering in me. And I asked them to give me a week. And as you know, you can overdose on Dad's Army. It shows all the time and always has done ever since it started on television. Mm-hmm. It's always on repeat. So I watched a few episodes and I had a DVD somewhere I remembered and I looked at it and I thought, oh yeah, maybe I could get away with this actually. and I'm really glad I did it because the people, you know, the design and the director, going back to the old camera scripts and the rest of the cast, it was done with such love and such respect because obviously we thought we could be opening ourselves up to quite a lot of criticism doing this, trying, you know, daring to step into these great people's shoes. But I think we did it with enough respect that I heard very little negative response. And I think people were just grateful to see the scripts again.
Yeah, definitely. From my point of view, you did do a really great Arthur Lowe as well. He's a very difficult, I can imagine he's a very difficult person to kind of...
He's quite pompous. he's, 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 a, Northern men who speaks very poshly, isn't it? I had a line that I just loved, and it was my go-to line, which was, as you know, Hitler as yet has not had the courage to scrap with us toe-to-toe. Instead, he uses the cowardly weapon, the firebomb. Now, we all know how to use these, but we must keep them up to date. So, I mean, I would just think about that and try to think about it. The other interesting thing was is that the estate of Croft and Perry, the writers, said that we weren't to change anything. And I thought that's absolutely quite right. But unfortunately, I noticed that Kevin Eldon playing Clive Dunn got to say, they don't like it up 'em, sir. And Robert Battist playing Sergeant Wilson got to say, do you think that's wise? And there wasn't any of Arthur Lowe's catchphrases. And I did have a scene with Tom Rosenthal, who was playing Pike, when he couldn't get to grips with something. And I had to grab this fire extinguisher off him. And I wrote a note to the estate saying, please, 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 can I call him a stupid boy? And they went, yes, of course you can. So I did put in a stupid boy. I did put one of those in, which is great.
Fantastic. Dad's Army. I mean, that's, you know, it's a classic anyway. So just, yeah, like you say, to bring it around and keep that sort of,
British sitcom ever, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Don't tell him your name, Pike. Talking about U-boats, that was actually,
yeah, exactly. I'm on either side myself, you know, it's fine.
Oh, dear. No, of course, that's great. Then I say it's another piece of work that you've been through. You've also been, I think, The Crown you did previously to when we spoke last as well. And also,
well, it was just before lockdown. It was December. I think I finished on December 2019 and was supposed to go back to do reshoots for some nice stuff. But unfortunately, COVID put paid to that. So I ended up having a rather truncated role again. I'm glad we hit one of my lead roles there. A rather truncated role as Sir Bernard Ingham. But that was another, you know, impression of a real person, which is which I really enjoyed because I remembered Sir Bernard Ingham from the 80s and that very peculiar and distinctive voice of his. So it was very nice to get to grips with that as well.
Fantastic. And that's some of The Crown. I mean, that's taken the world, well, UK and the US by storm. I think the US love everything that's got to do with the royals, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, and obviously, I've watched all the seasons as well, but I think a lot of people seem to take it as gospel truth as well. They don't seem to understand it's a dramatization that's based upon. A lot of it is probably, I can see a lot of it is the fact there's things, you know, it's there, the truths are underneath, but it's embellished and dramatized.
I saw a lot of complaints about that on social media and, you know, saying that they're distorting the truth. But of course, the thing is, there are, you know, people weren't there. I mean, any time you're telling the story of something that really happened, it's mainly, you know, dramatization. I'll never forget going to see In the Name of the Father in the 80s, the film about the Guildford Four. Yeah. I think it was Guildford Four, wasn't it? And of course, the actual way they were defended to get out was a very complex piece of legalese. And quite rightly, they invented this whole thing of Emma Thompson looking at a bench and walking around and seeing that there was a tramp on it. It's all complete nonsense, of course. But that's how you tell stories, you know. Mm-hmm. If you want to see something more close to the truth, go to the Discovery Channel. That's my advice.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why The Crown's great, because you're right, because it's not a fly on the wall documentary. It is
no.
It's people knew the news articles. They saw what happened. You know, I remember. Yeah. It's getting to the stage where I remember it now of what happened, and you just think, this is something that, you know, they've traumatized what could have happened behind that, you know, what the conversations would have been.
I mean, Shakespeare was doing it 450 years ago, you know, so if it was good enough for him, it's good enough for us.
Exactly. It is a cracking series. And again, I don't agree with those negativity comments about the way they do mention things like that. It's like, it's television. It is drama. It is entertainment.
Drama, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to have to start putting disclaimers up saying, The drama, The Crown, is a drama. Oh, is it?
Yeah. Really? Yeah. Yes, sadly, I think a lot of people, so quite a few people need that kind of disclaimer up there. It's like the ones where you do not, cruise control in a car does not mean you can take your hands off the steering wheel.
And they're the same people who need do not drink on bottles of bleach, that sort of thing.
Yes, that's it. I think so, definitely. I'm trying to focus on certain areas, and obviously I know that the big one, which is the most recent one, which is a fantastic one, is the latest season of The Doctor Who. Your character all the way through is Professor Jericho, which was most of the way through.
It was the last three episodes then.
stealing scenes and very, very moving. Is it showed in America yet? I won't spoil it.
A lot of people have seen it in America, whether or not it's been, whether they've had to search for
it. I'm sure it has been. There's moving scene in the last episode of Flux as well.
Yeah.
So how did you find when you got the role of Professor Jericho, when you knew you were going to be in a Doctor Who? Because you've got Pirates, which is major, you've got Dad's Army, The Crown, and now you're in another huge fandom of...
Yes. Well, of course, I'd been in it before in 1984. First story, The Twin Dilemma. Very interesting going back and doing it again after 37 years and the way television has changed. It's a completely different medium now. It was, multi-camera back in those days with very dodgy sets and camp costumes
I've seen the picture.
Seen the picture. Yes, looking like a tinfoil turkey, as I was referred to on one post. But it was great to go back and the role. Funny enough, that it was a bit kick bollock and what's his name scramble. I know I should have said what's the name for bollock, shouldn't I? Never mind. Because we were just getting out of COVID and they wanted to pick the show up again. So they sent me a script and said, "There's this episode of Doctor Who." And I said, "Yes, I'd love to do it. It'd be great." But I realized at the end of it that there wasn't really a conclusion to my story. So then they wrote back and they said, there's another episode. Will you do another episode? And I said, yes, of course. That'd be great fun. And I went to the end of it and I thought, there's still not an end here. And they're still not asking if you had a third. So I had to go to America to work. Right. So I said, they came back for a third one. And I said, well, yes, I will. But, I don't think I'll be able to do a fourth. And they said, well, it's all right. There won't be a fourth. It's the last episode. So I said, okay, we're on. Just give me a nice out at the end. And they did. They wrote me a wonderful.
It was a very, very.
Yeah, it was such fun. And a great team of people, a great crew, wonderful directors. And, the actors themselves are just absolutely incredible. I love John and Mandip and Jodie, obviously, great people.
Yeah. John's, I've not seen him really as an actor. I know he's done a couple of acting roles before, but so I've not really seen him before. Obviously, the comedian, the guy has me in the stomach crying. And I guess he was he doing that kind of thing on set, making everyone...
No, well, yeah, I mean, he's a funny guy, but I mean, he was really enjoying acting, and I was swanning around with him and Mandip going, I'll teach you all how to act now, it'll be fine. Just you watch me and follow my lead. And we had quite a bit of fun over that as well.
Excellent.
It was great.
Brilliant. I mean, Jodie Whittaker as well. I know. I mean, awesome.
Oh, what a bundle of energy she is. She's extraordinary. She has so much to do and so much complex dialogue. And she comes in bang on the money every time and so full of energy and a real leading actor, leading that show. It was just terrific.
Brilliant. I mean, I know there's a lot of divided opinion originally because it made me laugh because it was everyone was like, you can't have a female doctor. So I was like, right, you're talking about a fictional alien from a fictional planet called Gallifrey who changes appearance every other time.
I know.
And you're lucky that they're actually human still.
People just do not think before they speak, do they?
No. But she's been fantastic, Jodie. It's really sad to see
I think she's wonderful. I mean, they've all brought something amazing.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Matt Smith, you know.
Peter Capaldi. Peter was brilliant. Obviously, Tennant. And, I mean, even the one season with Christopher Eccleston, he only lasted for one season. I don't know why. But he brought, but I think that was really good to introduce the new feeling of Doctor Who. So that it was, it served a very useful purpose to make it, you know, film. Oh, COVID, to make it, you know, very filmic rather than, you know, what it had been before.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And you know, I mean, yeah, you're right, because they are very different characters through, say, from Eccleston to Tennant to Matt to Peter Capaldi and to Jodie as well. And it's, I think that's what has drawn so many people now to the Doctors again is just their vibrancy. And say, Jodie Whittaker, I've never met her. I'd love to meet her one day, but she just seems to have that, like you just said, that zest and energy.
It's extraordinary. Yeah, but just the joy to work with. I mean, extraordinary.
Definitely, definitely. I can imagine that.
I think she'll be sorely missed.
She will be. Because she'll regenerate very soon, I think, if I remember rightly, which is going to be sad. I think she's running. Yeah, this was the last full season, wasn't it, series for her, and then just a couple more episodes. Sad.
I think there's a few more specials coming, from what I understand.
We've got Chris. No, we've had that one. One or two. Probably next Christmas, I think, by the time
we get through.
I'm just guessing. I don't.
You're spitballing, Chris.
I am, yeah. So what was the most favourite part of filming in the latest Doctor Who? Because the Weeping Angels, to me, is probably one of the scariest foes that the Doctor and the Companions have ever faced. They just really creep me out.
They were terrifying. I mean, I was terrified by them. I mean, I know that. I did keep making a mistake, though, because I'm getting so old now. And a little bit revealing my love for wine as I get older, I kept referring to them as whispering angels, which they reminded me is a rosé wine, not a Doctor Who enemy. And I'm actually drinking it right now. But it was wonderful. All of it was wonderful. It was hard work, you know. It was quite difficult because it was Cardiff in lockdown. So when I wasn't working, spending a lot of time in my hotel room eating the same three things that they had on the menu, bless them, because you know they only had a certain amount of people being able to come in. So it was quite difficult logistically doing it. It was funny coming away at the end, not knowing what any of the crew looked like because they were all wearing masks all the time. really enjoyable. All of it was pretty enjoyable. I particularly enjoyed, because I remember when I did the first one, going to a quarry somewhere in Essex, where I crash landed or something, as Hugo Lang, and we went to a quarry in Wales, and I thought, oh, this is my second Doctor Who quarry, I can't wait. But of course, nowadays with CGI, the quarry was made to look like the Himalayas, and it was absolutely stunning, and it was a great scene going up to visit the
That was brilliant. That was so funny, that guy with the guru.
That guy was great. He was so funny. I'm kidding you. I'm teasing you. That one. That's really good.
Yeah, he was brilliant. He's got a cult following as well. That's Professor Jericho now. So did you actually realize? Well,
no, I didn't realize how popular Jericho is going to be. And somebody was telling me on Facebook, and I've actually looked, that Professor Jericho has his own, not website, but his own Facebook channel.
Yeah. Brilliant.
And he's got a blue tick, and he tells all about his adventures. It's extraordinary. I read it. I'm very excited reading it. It's wonderful. I don't know who it is who's doing it, but I'm very flattered that the Eustatius has been taken into the nation's heart.
So. There are some fantastic fan fiction places out there like that, where they've created stuff like that, and they just carry on with character timelines. I mean, would you ever like to see...
It'll be very interesting for me, because I do a lot of conventions and... You know, I obviously, as I say, I touch a lot of bases with Doctor Who and Pirates and Supernatural and Downton Abbey and Doctor Who. It'll be very interesting to see if Eustatius has generated a little more interest in me from these people, and I suspect they will, because obviously wherever you go around the world, there's always a huge Star Wars and a huge Doctor Who presence in the cosplayers and the machinery and Daleks and stuff going around. All I got to do really is get into Star Wars now, and I've really cracked the lot, I think. It's the one left.
It is. It's the one. Yeah, it is. It's the one big fandom left. Yeah. See, I could, I'll get myself stuffed. I'll go to my next Comic Con as Professor Jericho.
There you go.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see people cosplaying Jericho. That'll be great.
Would you ever like to see him perhaps have survived the Flux to appear back? I mean, I can't see much of it online, how likely that would be, but it was such a lovely ending, to be fair.
You know, it's Doctor Who, isn't it? I mean, anything can happen, really. You could go back in time, you know, you could, there are alternate universes as far as my readings in physics tells me. I'm sure Eustatius Jericho could come back again. I have a feeling he's very much Chris Chibnall's child, and whether the new regime or the old regime coming back would want to do that entirely up to them and perfectly understandable. But, you know, if they asked me to go back, I'd love to play him again, just because of the joy of people. You know, you play a lot of parts and sometimes they come and go, and sometimes they score a little, it really resonates with people. And Eustatius did. And so it would be something I'd love to do it again, you know.
Fantastic. Excellent. I was going to say something as well about it, but his last lines.
Oh,
I thought it was beautiful last line, because if I remember rightly, it's J.M. Barrie.
It's J.M. Barrie, it's from Peter Pan, yeah.
It's,
what an awfully big adventure. Yeah, I know, it's wonderful. I made a bit of an idiot of myself because he said, did you like the last line? I said, yeah, great. Christopher Robin, Winnie the Pooh. He went, no. Oh, isn't it? Oh, no, J.M. Barrie, that's it. Yeah, Peter Pan. Same period, wrong character.
I had exactly the same, because I was trying to think of the line myself, and I was thinking, was that Winnie the Pooh, or was it Chris?
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
I was very confused.
So you're not alone. So it came up to me at all.
Good.
I've got, there's two fans have sent some questions in, which I'll talk about. A guy called Matthew Rose, as an actor.
Hello, Matthew.
As an actor who's had extraordinary remarks of working not only with Peter Davison, Sylvester McCoy, Paul McGann, Colin Baker twice, David Tennant through Big Finish, and now Jodie Whittaker. He says, we've just had that one. How does it feel that Jericho is going to be remembered as iconic as Mr. Gibbs, or even more iconically as Mr. Gibbs? We kind of touched briefly on it.
Yes, I mean, if he can be anywhere near as iconic as Mr. Gibbs, then I'll be a very happy old character actor. I would love that. What's extraordinary is that Eustatius seemed to, as I say, resonate with people over a much shorter period of time than Mr. Gibbs. For 20 years. And I was just 2 months in Cardiff for Eustatius Jericho. But it pleases me greatly, as it would any actor. Yeah.
Fantastic. I'd love to see Mr. Gibbs come back as well. We've got new Pirates movies, but I'm not. We'll see how those go.
I don't know that we have. I mean, people are always asking.
I think we have. I think they would keep asking to mention it, I think. I don't know if it's been confirmed, but...
Well, we'll find out at some point, I suppose. You'll all know before I do. Very low down the pecking order.
I'm sure you're just being very, very coy. Oliver Egger, he's another guy from Twitter. There's two things. One is, are there any new projects you're currently working on? Which was a question I was going to ask, but I'll ask it on behalf of Oliver.
Anything? Yes. In the new year, I'm going to be doing a political drama here in England about a sort of a terrible scandal that happened in the late 60s and early 70s involving a Labour MP who was... found out to be a Czech spy and actually faked his own death. It's a really interesting story called John Stonehouse. And I will be essaying the role for the second time in my career of the late Prime Minister of England, Harold Wilson. Okay. So I'll be donning a gabardine mac and a pipe, and I'll be pulling out my my Harold Wilson again, after having played him briefly in the Tom Hardy film Legend in 2015.
Mm.
So another real person I've got to get under my belt again.
Legend. That's sort of the craze one, isn't it?
The craze one,
yeah. Mm. Again, what was Tom Hardy like? Because I mean, that role is Legend in the film.
Extraordinary.
To play both twins, and that's got to be
absolutely difficult. Extraordinary. Well, I didn't meet him on the film, but I had played his sort of adoptive father in Wuthering Heights many years ago, and I just thought he was a great talent, and indeed he is. And I watched Legend again actually during lockdown, and it's quite an extraordinary achievement. He's brilliant in both of those roles. Yeah.
He does. He plays them so vastly different. I mean, they're very...
It's incredible, yeah.
The real characters themselves are very, very scary. Yeah. But, you know, there's some comedy in that film.
You call yourself a gangster. It's embarrassment. I love that. I love the way he plays Ronnie.
Yeah, he walks out of the pub. Yeah.
Who's
saying him? Bye.
Embarrassment.
Yeah. He is.
I prefer boys.
Yeah.
I'm a giver, not a taker.
It's fantastic. The second one from Oliver was just, he's obviously in Austria, is Oliver, and he said, will you be at Vienna Comic Con in 2022 unless it gets cancelled? And have you visited Austria as well before?
I hope so. I was supposed to be in Vienna this year, and of course, as Oliver will know, it got cancelled. So I would love to, because I love Vienna, and I was very disappointed when that happened. So, fingers crossed.
Fantastic. Have you got any stage work? This is my question again. Anything? I know, because you do a lot of stage work as well. Do you have anything theatre work?
Well, I have done a lot of stage work. I did King Lear. We probably talked about this last time in 2017. I at the end of it, I felt very fulfilled by having played that the Everest, as they call it, of roles. And I have discovered since that it would take something very extraordinary to drag me back onto the boards again. I'm sure I will at some point, but I haven't in the last 4 years found anything. There's a couple of things I'm developing with some people that I might do. I'm quite interested in a musical that I've been developing with some friends, or they've been developing for me, and so that might happen, but no plans as yet. No.
Okay, well, you've been very busy on the TV
I'm becoming increasingly interested in directing as well. I've directed a short, and I've directed a couple of little shorts, and I work with some students that are a company called Real Scene, and I directed the final four films for those guys at Real Scene, and I've really been enjoying that. So it's something I would look towards doing a bit more of in the future, I think.
Fantastic. I think you find the acting experience that you've had over the years as well would really help in a directorial, because you'll be able to understand them.
Yeah, it does. I mean, people come to directing from very different places. I've always found I really like people who've come from editing. I try not to be an actor director, though. I can help them with the acting, but I try to come from somebody who has an understanding of the visual and pacing nature of film.
So
I try not to be an actor's so much an actor director as to be a director, you know, to do that job properly.
That's kind of where I meant, is because of that. You've got the visual way.
Absolutely. And I certainly know what I like in a director and what I don't like in a director. And I've had them both in equal measure in my career. And so I'm pretty opinionated about that.
Fantastic. Now, I mean, you know, it's a very niche thing, and I've spoken to so many people, and again, who, you know, and some directors as well, and it's a very, like you say, it's a very, people do, they're opinionated one way or another. Exactly, they know exactly what you've just said. They know what they like and what they don't like, in a director, obviously. I don't want people to say that what they do like and don't like in a director, because
I can tell you what I do. I like and I don't like. I like in a director someone who knows what they want and knows when they've got it and move on. The sort of directors who just shoot the hell out of everything because they're not sure how they're going to put it together exhausts actors, really. It's really nice when you go, oh, we finished that scene, we're on to the next one. Great. There's an energy that happens that is really, really helpful to actors, rather than the debilitating notion that, well, we do a wide shot and then a mid shot and then a dirty two and then a mid close up and then a close up on everybody. You think, oh, God, this is just so boring. So
speaking of director, would you like to work with someone like Tarantino? I'll just mention his name because someone I've spoke to before had worked with him on 12 Years a Slave. No, Django Unchained, I think it was.
Right, yeah.
One of the two, I can't remember. I think it was Django Unchained. And he said the vibrance he had as a director, because he was cute to come in every day. I mean, that guy, Tarantino, he just knows everything about. He's like an encyclopedia of movies. And he was just every morning.
Just because of that, I'd love to work with him, obviously. you know, there are all those great directors that I grew. Well, I was actually a grown man by the time his first film came out, or the Reservoir Dogs. Scorsese, I love. They're just lovely. A lot of European directors I love as well. I'm always very excited to work with new directors, and I'm always very hopeful, and only rarely am I disappointed. So that's good.
That's good. That's great. Excellent. And before I finish recording, Kevin, is there anything you would like to say to people who are watching or listening?
Happy Christmas and a very, very merry new year. And let's hope for a fun 2022, shall we?